This is WGRE 91.5 FM, Greencastle, Indiana.
Good evening and welcome to Music for Life, Music from DePaul. In this episode, jazz director Steven Snyder gives us a preview of what the jazz ensemble has in store. Matt Skiba finds out what the horn and trombone ensembles will be performing this week. And Dr. Craig Paré comes in to take us into the conducting classroom with two of his students and then tell us about the upcoming band concert program. Then we have a wide-ranging conversation with two members of Trio Globo and their guest singer, Loire, our most recent green guest artist. There are lots of exciting things going on in the DePaul School of Music, and we're glad you could join us for Music for Life. Sunday, November 23rd at 3 p.m., our concert band returns to the stage of Kresge to bring us their next concert. And here to chat with us about it is our conductor, Dr. Craig Paré. Welcome.
Thanks, Dr. McCoy.
Good to have you here.
Thank you.
So what are we performing this time?
The more I look at my performances, the more I see myself as a Whitman sampler. We have a variety of different types of pieces.
I like that kind of concert.
I tend to enjoy that as well myself, not only for the type of literature I'm trying to teach, but I really want to provide a variety of styles for the students within one program. For example, we're going to start off with a brass fanfare called Fanfare MMX. It's by a composer that wrote this piece for a competition for the Dallas Wind Symphony that sponsors brass fanfare pieces for a competition every year.
Wow.
We're also going to feature, and this is one of my favorite aspects of this program, Rob Danforth on horn. We're going to perform Jim Beckel's The Glass Bead Game.
Wow.
A wonderful horn concerto.
He was nominated for a Pulitzer Prize for that, I believe.
I believe so.
Yeah, right.
Featuring Rob Danforth is a real treat because anytime we can work with a faculty member in front of the students, they learn a lot. We haven't performed this piece, I think, for 14 years. We recorded it on our Airs and Dances CD, and I haven't performed it for such a long time, and it's nice to revisit. To me, it's a classic piece.
It is. It's a great piece, and to have Rob play it. Mm-hmm. Rob's such a fine performer, principal with the Indianapolis Symphony and also on our horn faculty here. And as I always say about both of those gentlemen, Jim, who's the principal trombonist, and composer in that case, they make it look so simple.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they sound beautiful and they're doing all these pyrotechnics and the look on their faces, well, I think I'll have some peanut butter and jelly when I come home.
A Texas composer, Dan Welcher, a piece called Zion, which is written for reminiscing and thinking about Zion National Park, but also calls on two Zion tunes from the Sacred Harp tradition as the basis of the themes for this work as well.
Uh-huh. And then what else?
That's the Commando March of Samuel Barber.
Oh, boy. There you go.
We're in C-sharp and C-flat and F-flat major chords regularly. And it's
right.
I like kind of showing the students, here's a classical, really well-renowned composer turning his attention to a march that isn't just in B-flat or E-flat.
Right.
A really good opportunity to do that. A Ron Nelson piece called Lauds, Praise High Day. Wonderful, energetic piece for
that as
well.
What a great voice, Ron Nelson.
Yep. So again, a nice variety of works that we're working on, and the chamber work being the brass fanfare that we'll start the program with and ending with Zion.
That's fantastic. It's a wonderful program. It's right around the corner. It's on
Sunday, November 23rd, 3 o'clock.
In Kresge Auditorium. It's going to be a great performance, and thanks for coming in to chat about
Thank you.
From the Dvorak and America Festival, pianist Aaron Tolar performs the fourth in F major of Antonin Dvorak's Humoresques, Opus 101.
This is student producer Hannah Gauthier, and joining me in the studio today are juniors Maureen Bailey and Zeno Carpenter-New.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. They're here to talk to me today about their upcoming recital. Can you guys tell us when that is?
It's November 21st. It's a Friday at 7:45 p.m.
Super. Yes. Super. Is that in Thompson?
Yeah. Thompson Recital Hall.
Can you tell us what are you playing?
I'm playing a piece called the Fantasistuka by Schumann. It's actually a clarinet piece that's arranged for horn and piano. It's gorgeous, really romantic quality to it. And then I'm playing with the help of Zeno and three other string players, including my little brother. And we're playing the Mozart Horn Quintet, which is a really, really cool piece. It sounds very Mozartian, but also kind of a little bit more on the later end of his works.
Awesome.
So that's a really cool piece. And then I'm also playing a horn quartet with my quartet.
Awesome. And what about you, Zeno?
Along with accompanying Mo, I'll be playing the first movement of the York Bow and Viola Sonata, and then following that will be an elegy by Elliot Carter, and then the entire first suite of Reger's three unaccompanied viola suites.
That's a pretty interesting combination of viola and horn. That's that's going to be fun. So how did you guys go about building this program?
Honestly, I think it's more of asking our professors what they think is appropriate for where we're at in our junior year. Professor Danforth suggested these pieces along with a couple others, and I spent some time listening to them and looking over them and picked a couple that I felt were appropriate. I really like chamber music, so that's why I'm doing two pieces of chamber music on my end. What about you?
Similar story there. I brought a few pieces that I was interested to Dr. Brockman, and she shot down a few of them, such as like the Walton and Hindemith concertos, a little bit above my playing level at this point. But I picked the few pieces that she said that I was ready to play, and we're going to give it a go.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like it's going to be a fun time.
Yeah,
we're hoping to make it kind of like a coffee shop theme. We're both going to Vienna next semester for the study abroad.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like a Mo and Zena go to Vienna, come see our recital, and we'll have coffee and cakes. What is it you said?
Kaffee and Kuchen.
Oh.
Yeah. Getting all German. Oh. So it'll be really fun. We're hoping to have it be somewhat interactive. So that will all come with time. We're not sure how it's going to be structured yet, but.
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds really cool, though.
We'll make it fun.
It's fun that you're including going to Vienna. That's fun.
Yeah, it'll be a good time.
Thank you guys so much for coming in to talk to me.
Of course, thank you.
You're welcome.
And can you tell us one more time when your recital is going to be?
November 21st, Friday at 7:45 p.m. in Thompson.
Looking forward to being there.
Thank you.
Thanks, Hannah.
Also from the Dvorak and America Festival, the DePauw Chamber Singers, under the direction of Christina Berger, perform Arthur Farwell's Pawnee Horses.
feature segment on Music for Life is Into the Classroom. And now we jump into the classroom with Dr. Paré. Welcome.
Thank you.
Good to have you here. We're here to chat about your conducting class. And I see you've brought a couple of your students in with you as well.
Two conductors, Patrick Rutledge, Becca Byers.
Welcome. Good to have you both here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So is this your first conducting class?
This is.
First time conducting?
In college, yes.
Yes. How does one even begin to learn conducting?
It's interesting to meet our students because many of them have had some leadership experience in front of an ensemble before they get to DePauw. It's not unusual. In conducting one, then, what I try to do is structure some of the elements and the physical aspects of conducting. First, with different skills. One of the ways I structure conducting one is we learn a few skills at a time, and they gradually build to where, by the end of the semester, if we think of a good, well-rounded conductor that can run a rehearsal and express themselves, we've begun to really start to get to those elements.
That's a lot in one semester.
It is.
So what kinds of things have you been up to?
Well, we've started with, you know, some really basic fundamentals. We talk about posture. We build
ourselves. Floor, door, wall, ceiling.
Yeah. Build ourselves from the bottom up. Uh-huh. Talk about how to effectively, you know, run a rehearsal and really dive into the music with the performers that we're conducting. And everything has been pretty fundamental at this point, but it's been really good to break things down and start from the very beginning.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Becca? What have you learned?
I'd have to agree with Patrick that, you know, we do start from the very beginning and we gradually add more and more, and it gets pretty complex when we talk about, like, you know, cueing while keeping tempo and thinking about what we want to pull from the musicians and how to show that.
Mm-hmm. So where do you ultimately end up at the end of a semester? What do they do, a final project?
Their final project is conducting a particular movement of a piece that incorporates not just almost, I'd say every one of the elements that we do, a good prep beat, showing expression, cueing, showing legato versus staccato, tempo indications, fermatas, a variety of things, some that we actually still won't be getting to until next week.
And do students choose the work?
No, I choose
you
that.
Choose the work.
They're going to learn next week before we get to Thanksgiving break.
I see.
The scores will be available then.
Uh-huh. And then how are they to go about preparing these scores? They go off over Thanksgiving break, and when they come back, they're ready to go?
Next week, we will start talking about the score study process.
Uh-huh. And then, yeah, the score study process is kind of a mythological thing to folks who are not a conductor. They are often shocked to find out how much time a conductor spends with their nose in a score.
But I try to lead to that throughout the semester. What we use is our excerpts. Mm-hmm. I create a packet rather than use a book. No book, to me, really functions well enough in the text of discussing what's going to be necessary for a conductor and including the variety of different excerpts I want to use to teach those techniques.
Right.
So I put together a packet. It also costs about $100 less than a book, too. And we gradually add on to that. And we're doing that in terms of score study with these excerpts. Some excerpts are 8 or 10 measures long, some are 20. But we talk about preparing the dynamics, preparing the first beat, showing what the style and the characteristic should be before they even begin playing or singing.
Right.
So what I do is I tie that into the entire score study process. And the work is a movement of a piece.
Mm-hmm.
So it's still in miniature, and yet it's still looking at every one of the aspects of conducting that we've been looking at from the first day. The first day we work on preparatory beats. That continues through just adding on all the skills leading to this preparation of a score.
Is this difficult?
In ways.
Yeah.
Some of it's very easy, but others, it takes time and a lot of practice to get down.
And has anything come as a surprise to you?
I wouldn't say that. I think that the sequence and the scope of the materials that Dr. Bray has picked for the class have been really logical. I think they've been laid out really well, and the excerpts that he's used have been actually very helpful for each of the specific topics. I don't think anything has been surprising.
Right, good. Well, it sounds like a fascinating course and a challenging one, and good luck on your final projects and get into those scores over Thanksgiving break. And thanks for coming in to chat about it.
Thank you.
Steve Snyder, setting the world on fire with our new jazz program. Welcome, Steve. Good to have you back.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
So every time I turn around, you're up to something. You've got Jazz the Duck going on all the time. You just played for Jimmy Kimmel last night. That had to be fun.
Yes, that was terrific.
And now we're here to chat about your upcoming jazz concert just around the corner.
That's right. On the 19th of October. That's a Wednesday.
So what are you bringing us?
We're going to have some Thad Jones.
Oh, love Thad Jones.
Yeah. Some Bill Holman, Oliver Nelson's, Frank Mantooth, and Bob Mintzer.
What Holman are you doing?
We're doing two pieces. One's called The Opener, and the other is an arrangement of Speak Low.
Oh, cool. That's a great arrangement of Speak Low, too.
I love that.
Although there are so many great arrangements of Speak Low. Yeah, that's a great chart.
Yeah, and so many great Holman charts, too. It's a unique style that he has.
Yeah, you know, you could do a whole night or a week or a month.
That's a great idea.
Yeah. So when you're putting together a program, what are you trying to do? I mean, are you highlighting sections of the band? You're trying to just put together great music? You want a rhythm that moves from tune to tune? What's up?
I think there's a little bit of all of that that's included. You know, thinking about what musicians do particularly well that you can highlight. Also thinking about which charts present certain challenges that you feel like other sections would benefit from undertaking.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, you want a flow to the program. You want a nice mix of things and kind of a dynamic and emotional curve to the whole thing, too. So, you know, it's a little bit of all of that stuff all put together.
And the palette, you know, for jazz ensemble, and especially in the past 15 years or so, has really just expanded so much that
indeed
you can have a great night. What I've really been enjoying listening to the band rehearse and hearing them play is the cadre of soloists that are really coming together nicely.
Yeah, that's been terrific. I'm really enjoying that. We've got soloists in every section. And
you're really deep in some of those sections
indeed.
Where it's like, okay, now who do we let solo?
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, okay, you've heard enough of you. You can keep going, but I'm going to give it to somebody else now.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Do you ever not pick until the night? I mean, does everyone know when their solos are up? Or?
Yeah, I like to make sure that we have our routine down. We know exactly what we're going to do so that everybody's prepared to step up.
Yeah, well, this is a great night of jazz. You guys have been busy doing all kinds of great things, and we're looking forward to this big performance. It's
the 19th of October. That's Wednesday night. It's going to start at 7:30, and it's also going to feature the Greencastle Middle School Jazz Band.
That's fantastic. Glad they're warming up for us again. It'll be in Kresge, and you won't want to miss it.
Hi there, this is Matt Skiba, and with me today are two students to give a little sneak peek of the upcoming French horn and trombone recital. French hornist David Acton.
Hello.
And trombonist Kira McManus.
Hi.
The concert will be November 18th, beginning at 7:30 in Thompson Recital Hall. So can you guys give me a general idea of what we can expect from the French horns and the trombones this semester?
Well, on the horn side, we're doing a couple large ensemble works with all of the horns in the group, and then a couple quartets as well. So one of the title pieces in the large ensemble is by Carrie Turner, who's a very profound composer for horn, and it's called Farewell to Red Castle, and it's a really exciting piece, very challenging, and it's one of our favorites thus far. And then we're doing another piece called The Magnificent Seven. It's from a movie that I've never seen, but everyone else seems to have, and it's really cool. It's about cowboys and stuff, and it's an exciting piece. And then the quartet that I'm in is also by Carrie Turner, and it's his third quartet, which he calls very difficult, and I must agree, but it's also very exciting.
Yeah, it's always really interesting with the French horns to see how, because at least for the semesters I've been here, you guys have always done some big pieces and then split up into smaller quartets to kind of show the different sides of the instrument you guys can use in a big and large setting. It's always really interesting to see that. Mm-hmm. Kira, what about the trombones?
Yeah, with the trombones, we're doing a lot of really good and challenging music. And the first thing that we're going to be playing is a Brahms piece, and it's really slow and lyrical. Everybody's on a different part, and it takes a lot of concentration, and we've been working a lot on playing together as a group, making beautiful music. So I feel like that one's going to be really important. Something that's going to be interesting is we're playing a jazz tune. It's called Body and Soul, and it challenges us in a different way, and so having us play different styles of music, and I feel like a lot of the trombone players in the section here have jazz experience, so it's pretty cool. We're going to be playing things that are generally very classical, then we're also going to show a different side of us with other things that we're playing. Yeah. So, yeah.
Very cool. Very cool. There are other studios that are like this as well, but especially with the trombones and the French horns, we're kind of given a special opportunity because we work with two of the musicians from the ISO. Can you guys kind of explain how in your lessons or how in these rehearsals, it's an interesting and fun experience to work with these professional musicians that actually do what we hope to do one day?
Well, in lessons with Mr. Danforth, he is great at orchestral lit, which is my favorite, so that's awesome. And in rehearsals, he's very organized and to the point and expects a lot. And a lot of people have trouble with that. But for those of us who really want to be in this career, it's fantastic and it's a good perspective.
Awesome. Kira, what about you?
Yeah, similar things with Professor Beckel. In lessons, a lot of times I'll be playing something or he'll be telling me like how to attack an entrance really softly, and he'll relate it to what he has to do in orchestra. And so it makes everything that I'm doing really applicable because he has so much experience. And it's like, I know that if I'm able to play this, he knows that this is how it works in the professional world. And so he knows exactly what to expect of us. And it's always been really interesting to get his point of view on everything from the professional perspective.
Absolutely. Well, thank you both for coming in. And we will see you on November 18th for an exciting concert.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm Kevin Days, and you're listening to Music for Life.
Hi, this is student producer Anna Gatula, here with senior horn major Allison Sherrick. Hi, Allison.
Hello, Anna. Thank you for having me.
Allison is a senior music ed major, and she will be presenting her senior recital soon. So, Allison, when is your recital?
My recital is on November 22nd at 1 p.m. in Thompson.
What are you playing?
I'm playing a couple solo pieces, the Richard Strauss First Concerto for horn. Mm-hmm. As well as Prelude, Fugue, and Foxtrot by Maria Grenfell, a lesser-known New Zealand female composer.
Oh, cool.
And then a couple smaller ensemble pieces. One for horn quartet by Carrie Turner, and three short pieces for woodwind quintet by Ebert.
Cool. What has been the most exciting thing that you've prepped for this recital?
I've really been enjoying the Carrie Turner quartet. I'm actually ending the recital on that.
Oh, great.
It's a very dynamic, high-energy, intricate quartet mm-hmm. for horn. I'm playing fourth on that, so it's a lot of really low playing. And I really enjoy all types of playing. I'm naturally a high horn player, okay. So that low horn has been really fun to play.
And is that piece more modern, romantic?
Definitely more modern.
Okay.
Carrie Turner's a part of the American Horn Quartet, so a hornist writing for horn, so he knows the instrument well and how to write very idiomatically for the instrument.
Oh, good. So when is your recital again?
It's on November 22nd at 1 p.m. in Thompson Recital Hall.
Excellent. Well, I'll be there. Thanks, Allison.
Thank you, Anna.
From their concert of November 7th, 2014, Trio Globo and vocalist Loire perform Alchemy. Thank you.
Friday night, we had a great evening performance with Trio Globo and guest vocalist Loire. And this interview was recorded on the afternoon just before that performance. Tonight, the Green Guest Artist Series continues with Trio Globo and guest artist Loire. And we have three of our four performers joining us in this busy day in the studio. And we want to say welcome to each of you. We're glad you're here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So we are looking forward to some really phenomenal music tonight. And you've already managed to get the campus fired up through the masterclass that you gave yesterday. I didn't walk in the door before people were telling me about how well that went. And I saw the first half of it and I was knocked out, but apparently went on and just got better and better.
We did manage to burn it up in there. First of all, what a great honor to be here and work with the students at DePauw. They were just all completely in the zone for the whole class.
And what you do is so unusual, and they were just so taken by. I mean, actually was in a class today watching someone practice. Even though they were supposed to be paying attention, they were practicing.
Wow.
What you had taught them yesterday.
That makes me happy.
That's
cool.
It was a great afternoon. And so then the rest of the group will be doing this tomorrow. So every time we have a guest artist, the concert is only a small part of it. We always like to have them into the studio, but the real fun is what happens in the classrooms and in the studio. So can you tell me some about what you guys will be doing with our students while you're here?
Well, for me, it'll be showing the percussion students something about frame drums and about the way I teach, which use a lot of vocalizations similar to what Laurie is doing. Mm-hmm. And some of the techniques that are involved from far-flung places, Arabic world, South India, et cetera.
We love the world influence that you've brought to us already.
And for me, if anyone at all plays the harmonica, I'm glad to share everything I know about that with them. And also, I will be emphasizing improvising in odd time meters. Because it's something that we do a lot in Trio Globo, and it's something that is increasingly popular in the improvisational world, in jazz, and many other forms of music.
So Howard, which came first for you, harmonica or piano?
Oh, piano, yeah. I started playing piano when I was about 8.5 years old.
And what brought you to harmonica?
It's hard to carry a piano in your pocket. And also, I fell in love with the sound of the blues, so both of those things. I just really wanted to be able to bend notes because the piano was such a machine, and holding this tiny instrument and breathing life into it, and it's so flexible and you can bend notes and be so expressive. It just was like a totally new world for me.
Yeah, I don't know if you've ever seen the old Far Side comic strip where the three cowboys are sitting around the fire and one's got a grand piano sticking out of his back pocket. And he says, pull that out and play. That's what prompted you.
It might have been.
That's really terrific. So let me ask a two-part question. Part one of this question is, how did Trio Globo form?
Well, both Eugene and I, the cellist, played with Paul Winter for many years. Mm-hmm. Eugene still plays with Paul. And during that time, we thought, hey, we should be doing some of our own music and be creative on our own. So we, with a pianist at that time, Paul Halley, we started a trio. And then it morphed into another pianist, Paul Sullivan. And then it morphed into the final version, which is Howard Levy. I had met Howard in Milwaukee, I think, was the first time, and was immediately struck by the versatility and how he would fit in to that situation.
And how many years have you guys been together, Howard?
It's about 20 years,
wow,
which is a scary thought. Yeah, because we're only 25.
Because you're 20, I thought it was 26, so I'm glad you corrected me there. And so now an interjection between my part two of my two-part question, which is the pronunciation of your name.
Oh,
because there's a little secret here we should probably share with our radio audience.
Yeah, so my nickname is Loire, and it was given to me by friends completely outside of my music, my professional realm. In fact, I had worked with people for years with my birth name, Laurie Kotler, and they didn't even know that I had this nickname.
So is your stage name Loire?
Now, I'm trying that out for a while because, you know, for years my career started to grow and develop, and I perform a lot overseas, and the manager that I had at the time and actually still work with suggested it. She said, you know, your nickname is so sort of
beautiful. And exactly, I said, you know, I always just thought of it as like a nickname. And she said, let's try that out. And it's working.
You join the world of one named artist, you know, Cher, yeah. Prince,
yeah,
Madonna.
Well, I
don't
know right about that. I see that it is capitalized a lot. Like, you don't have to, but you know, it's okay.
So how did Trio Globo and Loire come together?
Well, I'm part of Glenn's ensembles for about 10 years now. Whoa, 10 years. Takadimi project. Uh-huh. Actually, it started out as hand dance, mm-hmm. and I was a guest soloist, and Glenn and I also have our duo project mm-hmm. as well, which has come to be known Takadimi project, mm-hmm. Glenn Velez Takadimi project. And it just, for me, I can speak from my own standpoint, my greatest hero, music heroes on the planet is Howard Levy, Glenn Velez, and Eugene Friesen. I can't say that enough. And anytime I heard Trio Globo, I was just transported mm-hmm. both personally and also musically to want to learn, to want to grow, to want to cross every boundary possible.
Right.
What is possible? What can I do with this voice? The way that they are expressing their voices through their instruments. So for me, it was like, wow, imagine if I could ever play with Trio Globo. I mean, it was already mind-blowing to play with Glenn Velez,
right.
but then to imagine it all coming together, it was like, wow.
And I think that's one of the really fascinating things about this collection of musicians. You're very busy musicians in a lot of different ways, all of which come together in full fruition in Trio Globo. Mm-hmm. The four of you together are greater than the sum of the parts.
I hope so.
And each of you individually do such remarkable things, but it's really terrific when we get to hear all of you together. And we're really looking forward to your performance tonight. I know that's going to be a big hit. Another interesting element of what you guys are doing, though, is not just the world influence of your music, but it's also the atypical collection of instruments that you bring to this. Tell me about the instruments and how you decide what instruments on what tune and how much of this and how much of that. Are you always looking for new sounds inside your own ensemble, or are you now set? You feel like you've got, we added the harmonica, are we comfortable there?
Well, you know, part of it is all three of us and Loire also are interested in expanding the typical sounds of the instruments. And I think when you do that, you have so many more choices coloristically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for me, it's the frame drums. For Howard, it's the piano and harmonica. For Eugene, the cello. And Loire, the voice. So because we have so many choices, it gives a kind of orchestral quality mm-hmm. to the pieces that we're arranging and creating. And that means that, you know, we're always looking for some new dynamic or new color mm-hmm. and way they combine. And because we have so many choices, you know, there's always something new that emerges from our experiments.
And many times you're referred to as reinventing your instruments. Mm-hmm. Why does that keep coming up again? In what ways are you reinventing your instruments?
Well, I mean, just speaking for myself, I did reinvent the way the harmonica was played because I'm the first person to figure out how to play chromatically on the diatonic harmonica. Now, to your audience, the diatonic harmonica is the little one that everyone plays blues on and folk music, and mm-hmm. I was not convinced that all the notes weren't there. Because I would, you know, I'm a piano player, and if you find a piano with broken keys on it, you change practice rooms until you find one that doesn't have broken keys. And the harmonica, there's notes missing, and I'm going, what's
with this?
Yeah. You know, let me figure out how to find it. And I did when I was 18. So, and it's just a matter of how hard I was willing to work to make it sound convincing that way. And then in certain groups that I was in, I played piano and harmonica, and then I learned how to play them at the same time. And so it's sort of my little way of orchestrating of like how much of this piece do I want to play on them simultaneously? Which hand will I play piano with? You know, does uh-huh. it sound better with the left hand or the right hand on the piano? And then I hold the harmonic in the other hand. And when in the course of a tune does it sound good to play them separately
mm-hmm.
or to double the line that I'm playing instead of backing it quarterly? And so what Glenn was saying about orchestrating, it's really true because each of us have multiple ways of playing, sometimes multiple instruments, and Glenn has a huge number of different kinds of percussion instruments mm-hmm. he plays. And then Gene, you know, you talk about the cello, and most people's idea of the cello is it's this instrument you play with a bow.
Mm-hmm.
But Gene plays some pizzicato techniques that are much more closely related to African music mm-hmm. than to anything Western, and sounds like a kora player. Mm-hmm. And he also doubles a lot of his melodic lines with the voice, kind of tucked into it. And so sometimes when people listen to our recordings, they're not sure what they're hearing.
Right. And, you know, it's an interesting thing. On your recordings last year, we were looking at inviting you. I played this little game with some folks, funders and different folks, where I would put on your CD, but I wouldn't tell them who it was. And I would ask them how big the group was. Mm-hmm. And no one could ever guess that that was just three people. Yeah. You know, because, wait a minute, how's that possible? How are they covering all that?
Because overdubbing. No.
It's really not.
No, but a lot of it is not. And that's the, if you look on trailglobo.com, you'll see that last CD that we made, which is called Steering by the Stars, mm-hmm. there was a 3-camera shoot going on in the studio. And it really made me really determined to not overdub the harmonica part over the piano, because the cameras were there.
Right.
And I thought, I want to show the world what we really do. Yeah. And I also think it made me play better on the recording, because it's a more organically integrated thing when I play like that, as long as my brain can handle it without smoke coming out of my ears.
And one of the things I really love about that is the honesty of it. It's that, you know, yeah, anyone can polish this thing with so many overdubs, and even though live in concert we're doing both simultaneously in the studio, we break it down. I love it that you guys are out there. I love that 3-camera shot, because it's like, okay, this is keeping them all honest. I mean,
It
really came together very well.
Yeah, it's always, for me, very, very special experience to play with Gene and Glenn. Just any time we sit down to play, something special happens. And then adding Lar to it is like, you know, a thrill. Right.
Yeah, then the fire really starts. You know. So how do you guys describe yourselves? You know, because this really is, I've been faced with this challenge all year trying to explain, you know, you want to say something in a bullet point, you know, and it's like, well, they're really not a jazz. Well, they're kind of you do it.
You know, that's a question that we've been asking ourselves
at least 20 years.
And, yeah, you know, words are one thing, music's another.
Yeah, right. That's true.
You know, I it's tough. And this is something I think we've all collectively as a group, as an ensemble, and also individually, soloistically, have struggled to deal mm-hmm. with. And, you know, in this day and age, we also recognize how important the visual representation of what we do mm-hmm. sometimes leaves more of an impact, because, for example, if someone heard a recording of Howard or myself or Glenn or Eugene, they may not realize that we actually, there's no strings attached. Like, we mm-hmm. could just do this without a microphone. You right. know, there's the possibility of, you know, I've gotten emails through my website. I love what you do. So how did you do the looping? And how did you do the, and did you speed up the, and would you be interested in remix for dance clubs and, you know, and all that? Right. And so it's interesting what the public does with just an audio mm-hmm. representation of what I think innovative musicians are doing.
That's why the live experience is so valuable, because it's really like, I want to see how they do that. You know, you want to watch it in real time and see how mm-hmm. it goes. And another thing that I really love about you guys, you know, so Duke Ellington was totally anti-electric. You know, we're not going to amp anything. We amp one thing, but amp everything. We're not going to amp anything. We're just going to, and you guys could set up anywhere and make it happen. I mean, you need nothing to do what you do, you know. Mm-hmm. An acoustic piano would be nice. Mm-hmm. And after that, we're just going to bring our own stuff and off we go.
So I think the description for me would be, it's a live experience. Mm-hmm. That's what this music is.
That's the great answer. If you want to know what they are, you're going to have to come to the concert on Friday night, and we'll tell you then. Or we'll let you tell us after you've heard it. That would be good.
Yeah.
What advice would you give to young musicians starting out today? You guys are very successful musicians and have been at this a while. And we've got a music school full of students who are trying to figure that out.
I wish Eugene were here, because he teaches at Berkeley and he has a lot of experience with that. And he's told me some things about that, that he had one student who was really not that talented of a cellist. And he said he tried really hard. And what made Gene the happiest was hearing that he had switched to a music business major. Because he loved music, but he just wasn't a good enough player. So mm-hmm. I think if a person really loves music and they don't play well enough to be on the playing side of things, there are so many other parts of music they can be involved in. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a very important piece of advice. Because once you're bitten by the music bug, it's really hard to be a civilian after that.
That's so true.
And I do also tell people, in all seriousness, if you like doing anything else more at all,
that's true.
you shouldn't be a musician. You should do that other thing, because it's so challenging to dedicate your life to music. It's one of those things that it's very hard to do it. And you really have to have a tremendous belief in what you're doing. There should be like no option in your mind.
Right.
You can't say, well, if this doesn't work, I have something to fall back on. No. So that's the only advice I have to give, just from a very practical standpoint.
Glenn?
Yeah, I would say the same thing. I mean, it's really based on enthusiasm. And it is a great gift to get very, very honest feedback at some point. And that's not easy. It's not easy to tell a student, you know, you should be in the music business as opposed to the music performing, you know. But it's a very big gift to get that kind of feedback. But, you know, I the other part of me also says, what's wrong with being a failure? Mm-hmm. You know, I think if you love what you do, that is the most important aspect of the experience, you know. And even if it's not a great big success, it's important to try if you're really enthusiastic. Oh. And as Howard said, as if you feel as though you have no choice.
Right, right. Lori?
Beautifully said, yeah. Well, I think that aligned with what Howard and Glenn said, for me, it's always been about personal journey and of your self-development and continuing to be devoted to that aspect of life, because being introspective about who you are in this world is there's no separation between that and yourself as a musician. And they sort of go, you watch the development of yourself as you would as an artist. Mm-hmm. And I think that just informs your artistic expression every step of the way.
Right. And oftentimes when we have this kind of discussion, we're talking about people surviving the lack of success that they'll go through in their careers. But it's also true in surviving the success of your career. You folks are traveling so much and performing and spinning so many plates all simultaneously.
Yeah.
Does that wear on you over time? Or how does that extensive travel schedule you guys keep work for you as a group?
You know, it gives you a really great sense of humor.
Oh,
musicians,
my God.
We have our own peculiar brand of humor, the same way doctors do. Mm-hmm. Because what we do, sometimes it's just so absurd. Sometimes we're so tired. But it brings out a different level of performance just to stay at it through all of these difficulties. And sometimes I've done bus tours where I've played 22 gigs in 25 days and slept on the bus like 3/4 of the time. But it actually brings out more in your playing.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the more difficult the situations get, you discover things in your playing that you wouldn't discover if you were just, you know, comfortably sleeping in your own bed at night.
Right. If you hollow out your body, you find your soul.
That's good.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. It's The challenges often make you more appreciative of the gift that music is, because if you're really into it, you're always generating energy, you know, when you're playing. And the challenges that go around the practical aspects of getting from point A to point B, and then you get to play, and that energy that you get from the audience and sharing what you're doing, I mean, there's nothing that can replace that. It's such an amazing gift.
Really is.
The luxury part is getting on the stage and doing what, you know, making the music, and of course the ride to get there, you know, is pretty wild. But I think musicians are athletes, and the musician as athlete is something I think about a lot. Mm-hmm. And we are all on this quest to figure out our wellness plans.
Right.
And I also recommend that, you know, for every student to consider that, you know, how do you stay fit?
Stay
you
healthy.
Know, how do you stay healthy? How do you deal with stress?
Right.
Because there is nothing more stressful than airports and traveling, especially post 9/11. And it is a whole
changing
other
time
ball game.
Zones and trying to get through security. And,
change of diet, change of water, change of everything.
Right.
And your body gets turned upside down. And how to deal with that? Well, you know, athletes are having to deal with that, you know, when they're doing sports. And so I think it's not much different. So we find out.
So this will air after your performance. And when the community members and the students and folks that have heard your performance now get to hear this interview, what do you want them to remember about the performance? When they think back, how do you know when you've had that great performance? What do you want people to walk away from a Trio Globo performance with?
I think it's basically about expansion, you know, about seeing that there's more that meets the eye than you would think, you know. In other words, you look at a tambourine, you look at a harmonica, you look at a cello, and there's all this magical new territory that's possible, and transfer that to whatever there is that's important to you in your life, and you've got a lot of possibilities.
That's great. Well, we're thrilled that you are here, as I said at the top, not just for these great performances, but for the great interactions with the students, and thank you for all you've done for us already, and we're looking forward to a great weekend. It's good to have you here.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Concluding this episode, from their concert of November 7th, 2014, Trio Globo and Loire perform Miriam's Prophecy. Thank you.
We hope you've enjoyed this week's episode of Music for Life. We love hearing from listeners. You can contact us by emailing musicforlife@depaul.edu. We're also on Facebook at DePaul Music for Life, and you can subscribe to our show on iTunes by searching there for DePaul Music for Life. Our student producers are Anna Gadula, Matt Skiva, Burke Stanton, Rachel Amalfitano, Hannah Gauthier, and Caleb Denning. Our 21CM graduate intern is Elika Okerstrom. Veronica Pedrell is our online editor, and our show is produced by Matthew Champagne in the Judson and Joyce Green Center for the Performing Arts at DePaul University in Greencastle, Indiana. I'm Mark McCoy, Dean of the School of Music. Thank you for listening to our show. Keep music in your life, and have a great week.
It's Music for Life.